This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome to The Garden Show. Owen is still raising the roof out in the studio and I have Paul Oliver right here with me in-house.
Good morning. Always a pleasure to be here.
And we're going to talk nature. Urban nature, rural nature, any kind of nature.
And little birdies, too.
Birds. I'm sure there'll be some squirrel questions. So that's always fun. Okay, before we get into anything, announcements or some chitter-chatter, let's give the phone numbers, please, Paul, because you have a job when you're here.
Yes, I have two jobs, the phone numbers and the ringing the bell for the new
First-time callers. Yeah.
In Toronto, call 416-360-0740 and outside of the GTA, 1-866-740-74740.
Okay, did you do that right?
1-866-740-4740.
The only reason I said that is because one time years ago when Frank Proctor was my colleague here, he did the numbers wrong and we didn't notice, but we weren't getting any calls. Nobody was calling us. It's like, oh, this is a bit odd. And then suddenly realized, ooh, maybe we should do the right numbers.
Some lady in Oakville was getting calls like crazy.
Exactly. Some poor person was getting these, like, I want to know more about my geraniums. Anyway, so it's always important to do the numbers right. And, you know, I say to people, put speed dial. Like, remember, we used to put numbers in our speed dial. So, a couple of upcoming announcements. Just to remind everyone, because I did mention these last week, the Agincourt Garden Club is meeting this Monday, November 10th. That's at 7:30 p.m. Christmas floral designs is the big topic. They meet at the Knox United Christian Education Center, 2575 Midland Avenue at Shepherd. And of course, the next one coming up is in Burlington, Wednesday, November 12th, Burlington Hort Society, 6:30 p.m. Practical garden photography, not a bad subject for most of us. Practical, I think, being the operative word. We can all take garden photos, but are they useful for anybody?
You know? Especially garden photos in the winter when there's nothing on the plants. You just taking a picture of that beautiful cardinal sitting there staring back at you.
That would be you.
Yes.
Poop on the plants. Give me the birds. All right. They meet in the auditorium of the Central Arena, 519 Drury Lane in Burlington. And I have a reminder for everyone from the Canadian Rose Society to consider joining the Canadian Rose Society, because who doesn't love roses? I mean, really. They have this reputation for being so hard to grow or so, you know, persnickety or too big or too small or whatever. So learn more about roses and learn how easy they can be to grow, because there's so many different varieties. You just need the right, you know, cultivar for your garden, and you can be a very happy rose grower or rosarian, as we call them. Lots of benefits to membership. Check them out, CanadianRoseSociety.org. Only $25 a year. Now, speaking of societies, that makes me think of bird societies or nature societies. Paul, any suggestions?
Yeah, there are lots of them around. There are lots national, like the Birds Canada, excellent organization that represents people that love birding all across Canada, and do a lot of advocacy work on behalf of wild birds and environmental rules and things like that. And at the local level, you've got lots of groups like the Toronto Ornithology Group. You've got a lot of naturalist societies all around Ontario. They're local. They're focused on going out on local walks and talking about local activities. And I've spoken at quite a few of the groups, and they have wonderful people that are members that are very engaged, very caring about the environment and nature and birds and just my type of people.
Well, and that's why you as a sponsor, the Urban Nature Store as a sponsor and you as the lead of the store is so appropriate on the garden show because it's also connected, right?
If you love to go out and you put your hands in the dirt and rummage around and collect up leaves and prune plants, you also like to watch the birds that are watching you doing it.
Yeah, yeah. And we're saying, when are you going to fill that feeder? Well, let me tell you, just a few days ago, Thursday, I'm outside doing just that, you know, got my hands in the dirt doing something. And it's very quiet at my house. I'm pretty rural other than Trenton Air Force that sends some pretty loud planes every now and then. But otherwise, it's pretty quiet. And I heard this weird, like, barking, honking, like seals were flying overhead. It was such a weird sound. I'd never heard it. I look up and there's these big birds, long necks, not like, like we get herons, but herons never say a word. Like they're super quiet. Mm-hmm. But herons have a really big wingspan. And these weren't such a big wingspan, but really big birds picking and talking to each other. The four of them flying south, having a little chat about where are we stopping for dinner kind of thing. And I was like, I have never seen that bird or heard that bird. So I'm going, it's got to be a crane, right? And I'm looking up cranes and I go to my local bird friend. Did I just see like whooping cranes? And he's like, no, probably sandhill cranes. They're native to Ontario and not that unusual.
Yeah.
But then you look, as you're Googling, it's like, it's very auspicious to see a crane. Cranes have a very long history of being very special and magical and bringing all kinds of benefits to people who see them. And cranes are...
And bringing good luck. So you got four pieces of good luck.
Exactly. I'm walking tall after that going, well, I'm going to have a good weekend. Because it was... Yeah, no, cranes are just really interesting birds. And they live a very long time. They mate for life. It's this whole mating dance that they do that makes them really noticeable. And they're so big, you can't really mess them, I guess.
Yeah.
I was pretty pumped about that. So you've done the numbers, and I see we do have Larry on. Oh, yeah, he wants to talk about milkweed plants. All right, let's see what's going on with Larry, and then maybe we'll just remind people we're happy to answer calls. Anything to do with nature, gardening, indoor, outdoor, squirrels, birds. I've got lots of bird stories to share because I've got so many bird feeders. And same with you. I know we both are got serious nature going on outside our windows.
And the birds are going crazy at this time, knowing that cold weather is coming, getting ready for the winter. They're storing food, they're collecting food, and they're fattening up like crazy.
Well, and tomorrow, the weather tomorrow in southern Ontario.
Yes, mm-hmm. First snowfall, and apparently every bird knows it in advance.
And they're just hoovering. And it's crazy to watch how much they're hoovering. But then, of course, they fly into the woods and deposit all what they've just hoovered into the trees, I think. It's not – they can't possibly eat that much. But, the blue jays have been very busy at my house. And my newest feeder, because you gave me some peanuts that don't have a shell on them. And the blue jays are very confused. They just don't know what to do with those. They're like, what? Like, where's the shell? I can't figure this out. So they were kind of all nonplussed. So I got a feeder just for those peanuts. It's just a cylinder, like a fine mesh cylinder with a little roof on it, but no tray at the bottom. I do find sometimes those cylinder feeders, if they have a tray at the bottom, snow, rain tends to grab and sit, even though there's drainage in the tray. It does get all turned to mush and then turned like nobody wants to eat what's in the tray.
And you'll often get some of the larger birds trying to sit on the tray and they scare the little nuthatches and the little birds away.
And a nuthatch is exactly what I was looking for. I know they're in my neighborhood. They're not that unusual, but I hadn't seen any. And they're so cute. I mean, what bird eats upside down, right? And I love the form of them. They just have a beautiful profile. Anyway, within 24 hours of putting up your nuts into this cylindrical feeder, there were the nuthatches. So they were waiting.
Yeah, the blue jays love the peanuts in the shell as their top choice because they're actually a hoarding bird.
Sure are.
And they take it and they go back and they hide it away for the winter. And often they'll stick it into the big grooves on a oak tree or a maple tree and on the bark. And hopefully they remember where it is and they'll be back there before the squirrel gets to it first.
Right, or the chickadees or anybody who knows it's there. Well, and we have so many blue jays and our neighbors also feed like we do in the shell. We joke about who needs mulch? We have so many peanut shells underneath our trees, right? Because they break them open in the trees. There's just, we're an inch deep in peanut shells all over the place from the blue jays, just being little piggies.
They're your assistant gardeners.
Aren't they, though? All right, let's wait to talk to Larry after the break. But just before we go, would you mind, Paul, do the phone numbers one more time, and then we'll be right back.
In Toronto, call 416-360-0740, and outside of the GTA, 1-866-740-4740.
Sweet. Thank you very much. Back after this.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All right. We are here waiting for your calls. In the meantime, we have Larry on the line from North York. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Charlie. How are you today?
Excellent. How are you?
Second best day of my life today.
Of course. What's going on?
I just have a question. I've been watching videos of cold stratification of milkweed, mm-hmm. and I've had 200 seeds in the refrigerator in wet towels and Ziploc bags for 2 months. And the videos that I've seen shows that when they germinate, they get a little tail, and then it's time to transplant them. Mm-hmm. But mine have not, in 60 days, grown that little tail. Hmm. And I have six potting pots out the front that are like 3 feet in diameter. Mm. And I wanted to be able to plant them and then give a pot to each of my neighbors so that we can enjoy the monarchs. But they don't seem to be germinating.
Okay, so let's think about this for a second. Milkweed seeds that you collected 2 months ago, were they mature? Were the pods busting open on their own, dried up? And
they were starting to, but no, I had to open them up.
Okay. It could be that they were not yet mature, those seeds. They will naturally bust open when the seeds are ready to go. And as you know, they've got the little furry tail on them, or, you know, fuzzy, they're wind-blown, and they will propagate themselves by blowing around and landing somewhere. The stratification, just for anybody who doesn't know what that horticultural term means, is all to do with cold treatment. So you've been refrigerating those seeds with the intention of giving them a winter in your fridge,
right,
as opposed to real winter, which is starting tomorrow, I understand.
Yep.
So if you've seen nothing in 2 months, I'm not sure what the videos you've been watching, are they suggesting that you should see something within the 2 month period from those seeds?
They normally said after 30 days minimum, you should see a little tail come out, which I guess would be the beginning of a root.
Yes, it's called the radical. It's the first little root that pops out of the seed. Well, you have two options. One is to take those seeds out of your fridge, put them out into those containers that are ready to go, just cover them very, very, very lightly with a little bit of soil and let them be and hope that something shows up next spring. The other option is leave them in your fridge until something does show up, but it may not. And if it doesn't, to my mind, that's the fact that the seeds were not yet ready to be harvested. You were just a little bit too precipitous. But also remember with milkweed, and this is true for so many plants at this time of year, people will say, what about foxglove or forget-me-nots, like things I want to save. Nature provides winter in the winter, and nature, the way these plants have evolved, the seeds will either pop out or blow out of the seed pods or whatever the capsule is they were in. They'll land on the ground. They'll sit outside all winter, assuming no mouse eats the seed or bird. It will just naturally grow in the spring after natural stratification. So when in doubt, remember, you can just do that. Like if you could still go out and find some milkweed pods, like maybe take a walk today. It's a beautiful day, somewhere in one of your ravines in North York or, you know, down Evergreen Brickworks. You could probably find milkweed pods that haven't yet completely emptied and gather up a few more seeds that are really truly mature and scatter those outside. Don't go to your fridge. Just go right out onto those pots and let them sit there for the winter, and they should grow in the spring.
You talk about, let's say if I planted them tomorrow or when we start getting the frost, mm-hmm. but all of the videos said don't put them in the freezer.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the freezer would emulate, you know, January weather.
True. So why is that? I think it's because when we do stratify seeds, we are setting up an artificial situation. We're in plastic bags. We've got soil or peat moss or whatever. Sometimes, you know, sawdust people put for stratification purposes. So it's the freezer is probably just too intense, and particularly in terms of the plastic bags we tend to use. Outside, there's always that gas movement that doesn't happen in plastic. So fridges work. I've grown oak trees, believe it or not, in my refrigerator, and bulbs. We stratify those. You know, if you forget to plant your tulips, you can get them into the fridge in pots. If you've got room in your fridge for tulips in pots, and give them a fake winter over about 6 weeks, 7 weeks in the fridge. So it's even a shorter when we go into the fridge than it is in real nature. But it does work. So keep at it. Good for you. It's a great idea to be propagating milkweed.
All right, so I guess I'll just plant them tomorrow and take my chances and see what happens.
I'd get outside, see if you can find more seeds would be my suggestion, and plant them, right away. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, good luck with that. Let us know how that turns out.
we get those types of questions all the time because our sister company, treehelp.com, runs a large seed bank for trees.
Right.
And people have to go through the cold stratification for about 97 or 98% of tree seed types. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, our native trees. Yeah.
Yeah. And I always tell people if it recommends a 30-day or a 45-day stratification, double it.
Right. Yeah,
the longer the better, and then take it out and even put them in the trays, or even put them in the trays and then put them on a heated.
Oh, to speed things up. Yeah, because you're surface. In the house with them at
this
point.
Yeah, if you're doing them over the winter
inside. Yeah, exactly. But if you are going to do that stratification indoors, then plant indoors and heat them indoors, make sure you've got sufficient light.
And then you're ready to go next spring.
But you must have supplementary lighting. That will not work. They will just shrivel up and turn to dust in your beautiful setup that you've worked so hard for. But in our indoor conditions, the light is insufficient.
They've got to think Mr. Sunny is out there waiting for them.
Yeah, well, if you're going to play, sort of that... be nature, be mother or father nature, then you have to give every environmental, got to give the cold, got to give the water, got to give the soil, but got to give the light as well. So, and then, even bring the squirrel in just to mess things up. Then it's real.
Let the squirrel dig around and bury some of his nuts in there too.
Well, and the time I did put acorns in my fridge, they did germinate in the bags in the fridge. So when you say leave them longer, check them.
Yes.
Don't check
them all the time.
Check them all the time because before you know it, they will. You'll have literally a tree growing in your vegetable bin. So listen, one more time. Let's do the phone numbers. Otherwise, you and I are going to talk a lot. We do have Linda waiting on the line, who we'll get to right after you tell the numbers, and we'll come back for after our break.
Okay, in Toronto, call 416-360-0740, and outside of the GTA, 1-866-740-4740.
You do that very well. And the mantra is call early, people. Call often, because you can always call again. One question per caller, and first-time callers will get the magical bell. Wings.
The magic wings.
Everybody needs wings. This is a perfect time to be up above, looking over the garden and looking over the ravines and some of the beautiful colors that are still happening.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day out there today.
Yeah.
But tomorrow may not be.
Tomorrow is stay in bed day. Today is get outside day. We'll be right back after this.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, storks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All right, everything natural, normal, growing, plants, birds, squirrels, hawks.
Every type of little bird is anxious for tomorrow's snowfall.
I bet. So I have a red-tailed hawk that's taken up residence, I think, at my house in my neighborhood, who just keeps kind of hanging out. And everybody's afraid. It's a young hawk. It's young, small. But it's the crows. The crows just like you're just, who cares about you? They're the same size or bigger, I think, than the hawk.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. It'll just come and sit right beside the feeder, right? It just sits there going, okay, bring it on.
Bring on the dinner.
It's not interested in the bird seed whatsoever, just in who's interested in the seed. All right, we're going to talk more about how to keep the birds happy and healthy many months to come, as Larry was saying. you know, winter's coming and it gets pretty damn cold out there. So we've got to do what we can to support the birds, providing the shelter, the food.
The food, the water, everything to help the little birds during the winter.
Yeah, so if you've got questions about what seed for which birds or what's the best feeder, if you only have one feeder as an example, because, you know, I must have 15 feeders in my house. I have so many. But I do attract a lot of different birds as a result. And, you know, if nothing else, you can scatter some seeds on the ground and watch, like, the juncos, like all the little ground feeders will come.
Oh, yeah, like you don't need a big expensive setup. No. Just take some bird seed, spread it on the ground, let the ground feeders come for it, put out a shallow bowl with water in it in the morning, let them get a bit of water before it freezes, put it in the sun, it'll probably be good all day.
And I know you put peanuts out along the railing of your deck.
Yes.
And the blue know that.
The blue jays will be there at the same time every day.
Exactly.
And
they have a watch.
And the one blue jay now has really perfected. He's improved his hawk call. Because they're sort of the jokers. They can actually mimic other birds. And as soon as he sees a squirrel heading towards his peanuts.
Oh, he does the screech.
Yeah, he does the screech from the tree. He doesn't even move. He just up in the tree and the squirrel.
Flat to the ground.
The squirrel says, I hear the hawks are coming and.
Races away.
Yeah.
And then the blue jay comes in and takes the peanut.
Yeah, exactly.
They're pretty clever birds.
Yeah.
Actually, I think they're more clever than the average bird, blue jays.
Oh, they're pretty. They're one of the smarter ones, as are grackles.
Grackles, unfortunately, yes.
Yeah. Grackles are really smart as well, and they work as a gang.
I know. I wish they were prettier. I guess I'd probably like grackles better if they weren't so. Anyway, all right. I digress. Let's go see what's going on in Buffalo. Linda's on the line, and she's a first time caller. Good morning.
Good morning.
Did you hear that bell?
Hello, everybody, this morning.
Did you hear the bell there?
That's your first time.
I did. Thank you.
Yeah, you've got your wings. Welcome.
Thank
you. What's going on at your place?
Well, I have had a very large zebra grass right in the middle of my lawn, and I wanted to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. So I read that I could cover it and smother it because it's very big. I didn't think I'd be able to dig it up. Mm-hmm. So I've had it covered with a tarp, black tarp all summer.
Good.
And I cut it down to probably about maybe 4 inches above the ground, and then I covered it with a tarp. But I was wondering now if I should take the tarp off and let the snow and rain and whatever winterization get in there and do damage to the roots more or less. Or if I could just leave it all winter and see what happens in the spring.
Given how invasive zebra grass can be, and given the rhizomes, it grows from a rhizome. So that's an underground organ that is incredibly vigorous. You don't need much. You need a minuscule piece of rhizome, and you've got a plant. So
right.
Is the area in the middle of your grass where, you know, unfortunately you've had to look at a black tarp all summer, is that full sunny location?
It is.
Good.
It is.
So that's good. And you used a dark colored tarp, so the sun was beating down and heating up that soil beneath the tarp, hopefully cooking the zebra grass. The good thing about it, I love what you've done because it does do that roasting of the plants you don't want, but it allows all the living creatures to get out from underneath the tarp, you know, whether it's sow bugs or worms or whatever, they can get out from underneath and survive this process. You know what? I know, there's snow coming, Linda, and you guys always get three times more snow than we do. So why don't you leave the tarp for the winter to be on the safe side? The snow will cover the tarp so you won't have to see it. Be careful you don't slip on it, like if you're stepping outside, because that could be a slippery thing. But just to really ensure that the zebra grass is truly dead. It is a tough plant to kill. If next spring, when you do take the tarp off, you start to see little green sprouts that you recognize as zebra grass, have some vinegar handy in a little spray bottle, preferably cleaning vinegar, because that's a stronger acetic acid than cooking vinegar, and spray that onto the, just when they're young and newly sprouted, the vinegar will wipe them right out and you'll be done. You can kill that all off. Just stay on top of spraying carefully in the spring, if any survives, and then you can just either let it compost or dig up that whole mess and start again with something much prettier.
Yeah, no, it was getting too too big because it was in the fall. It was probably about 10 or 12 feet high.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. People do plant them because they consider it a nice plant, but it's it can be a real problem. And I'll suggest to you, this is a guide for Southern Ontario, but of course it would still be relevant to you in Buffalo. There is a great, the Ontario Native Plant.ca, Ontario Invasive Plants.ca has put out quite a nice brochure called A Guide for Grow Me Instead. So it's beautiful, non-invasive plants for your garden as opposed to things like zebra grass, which can be a real problem. Okay.
Right, yeah. That plant was here when I moved in. And At first I thought, oh, that looks kind of pretty. But after a while, like, it kept getting taller. And then I'd have to cut it back in the fall, and it was such a chore. And then I decided, and I have to cut around it when I cut the grass.
Yeah.
This is not even pretty anymore.
No, exactly. And it becomes you need a chainsaw to cut it down. It's nothing simple. So
right, exactly.
Well, great.
That's
well,
why I said I can't dig this up. It's way too big, beyond my capacity.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, what you did.
Okay, well, good. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. And don't be a stranger. What you did is called solarization, which is always a great idea, as opposed to stratification, which we were talking about with Larry. All right. Well, let's see we've got Joanne calling from Muskoka. I wonder if it's snowing there yet. Good morning, Joanne.
Hi there.
How's things in Muskoka?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Sorry, it's breaking up a little bit on my end. I apologize.
Go ahead. Ask your question.
Yeah. So I transplanted peonies from my Schomburg house to my Muskoka house when I moved here 4 years ago, and they have never bloomed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you want to know why?
Yes.
You planted them too deep.
Okay.
Yeah, it's that simple. So get them in, make sure they're in full sun, like 6 hours minimum sun every day where you plant them. Like you're going to have to lift them and perhaps move them, but either way, lift them so that they're sort of these massive tubers. It needs to be literally just on the surface, like just barely beneath the surface. And that full sun, well-drained, fertile soil, and that very shallow planting, they will grow in the spring and they should bloom no problem.
Super. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. I know. It seems it does make such a difference.
Yeah. A little bit, an inch here or there.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you have super happy peonies, but no flowers if they're down that extra inch. Look, you're getting your workout today, Paul. We got another first timer. We have Irene on the line. Irene, good morning, Irene, calling from Don Mills.
Good morning, and thank you for the bell.
Welcome to the show.
My question is, I got a huge, huge benjamia.
Mm-hmm.
It has gotten really tall, which that's not my complaint. I like it tall, but it's gotten really...
scraggly?
No, it's healthy, but it's gotten fat.
Mm.
So I don't know what I should be doing, if it's a good timing to prune it or just wait till spring. I just need your advice on this.
Yeah. Okay. So a benjamina is a kind of fig or ficus. We call them benjis. It's like a nice tree. It's a shiny leaves.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it's doing so well, because often people struggle, particularly in the fall. They tend to drop leaves. They know it's autumn and they go into their own little personal change of season. So I'm glad it's looking really good and healthy. You can prune any time. What I would do, if it's too big and it's like overtaking your room or, just getting in the way, spread some newspaper or something on the floor. Because when you start pruning a benjamina, it starts leaking latex, white. It bleeds white stuff.
Oh,
sticky,
okay.
Sticky. So sap. I mean, it's not, some people actually are very sensitive and it could make you a little skin irritation if you get it on your skin, but it's not toxic or anything. So yeah, get something down on the ground, sharp scissors, sharp pruners, cut back to make it look nice for the winter, which won't be a radical cutting back. It's more of a trimming at this point. 10% of the plant, roughly, if you kind of stand back and think about where you would take off some tips or even a full, if you've got branches that are crisscrossing, pick one, get rid of the other one. Just make it look like a nice looking plant. However, in March or February, you can get out some serious pruners and you can really do a much harder pruning then and a much more for shaping prune if you wish then. Because that is the best time to prune. When plants are starting to wake up for spring, actively growing, then, you can really go to town. And again, if you do a little bit of pruning now, you'll see which way the growth comes and you're going to learn from that. So next time you prune, you'll know exactly where to prune to get the growth growing where you want it.
Can I re-root some?
Sure.
Or not?
Yeah, you can. Well, probably won't root very quickly at this time of year. The tips you take off will likely not be what we call softwood cuttings. They won't be green stems. They'll be likely brown stems. So they're slower to root. But in the spring, whatever you're cutting off, you can easily root.
Okay, perfect.
All right. Let me know how that goes. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. Bye now.
Nice. Don't be a stranger. Paul will tell you, coffee's always on, right?
Coffee is always on.
All right. If I had one feeder and I lived in the urban environment of Hamilton or Toronto or Collingwood, what would be the one feeder I should choose and what would be the seed I should put into it?
I would probably pick a smaller size squirrel-proof feeder that is weight controlled. The Brome line is great. It's a Canadian
Brome, B-R-O-M-E.
M-E, okay. They make the squirrel-proof line of bird feeders, and they make about 8 different models. So you can,
that's not the squirrel buster. That's not the twirly one, right?
No, it's not the twirly one. It's a weight-based
right.
One. And the seed I would strongly recommend is sunflower hearts. It's all de-shelled, so you don't get any of the shells falling to the ground. It's all the same strain, so you don't get the birds digging through saying, I like this, I don't like that. So you don't get any of the mess or anything falling to the ground that you have to clean up. And all birds like it. It's not the favorite of something like a blue jay, but they will eat it as
well. Sure, they will.
But cardinals love it. Chickadees and finches and that go crazy for it.
Any sunflower. And
in the wintertime in particular, it's an excellent seed to put out because they get so much energy from it for very little work.
Right.
And the bird's trying to conserve their energy but take in as many calories and fat as possible.
Yes, fool around with those shells. They can just hoover.
And with the shells, like black oil is great for birds, but what you'll find is if the bird can't quickly open the shell, they'll toss even that down because they got this wall of food in front of them. They're just trying to consume as much as possible. But with sunflower hearts, they can consume 100% of it. So you get
no mess, which is nice,
and nothing on the ground.
But I have one question about the spring-loaded feeders. You mentioned they're made by Brome feeders. So they have you can set them. So you can set them for small birds, medium birds, and large birds. So what you're doing is setting the closing, like the weight of the bird will close it.
Yes.
Of course, we want it to close when a squirrel jumps up there. So we have it set somewhere. Now, what I find, because I have one of those, it might not be Brome, but it's that idea of the spring-loaded. If a big cardinal lands on it, it closes. If a small cardinal lands on it, it doesn't. It's set for medium. Mine only has small, medium, large. And I always feel so bad for the cardinal when it closes on its weight. So but a smaller cardinal, it won't close. But it makes a little bit of noise, and cardinals are really skitsy. Like, they just hate the noises, and they fly away, too. But so I just wonder, is there sort of an optimal setting, you would say? Like, is it kind of the medium is what you would go with?
Generally, the medium is what is the manufacturer setting that comes. Most people don't have to adjust it for that. Where you are adjusting it is particularly if you've got grackles coming and you want to exclude large birds, there's normally quite a big weight difference between a squirrel and a cardinal.
Yeah.
So normally the feeders can hold 2 or 3 cardinals on it at equivalent sized birds on it. So you may want to just adjust it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But one of the things when people do get them is they put them up, is they may want to tighten it down so that as soon as the squirrel goes on it the first time or the first few times, it's closing solidly. Then the squirrel learns that's nowhere for food for them. And then you can adjust it to allow the multiple birds on it.
Yeah, because certainly the chickadees, finches, they're super happy. They just can sit there all day. And if anything, they scare off the cardinals. They're like, get out of here. This is my feeder.
Yeah. And the ones that I really like, of the squirrel-proof ones, are the ones that have the spring inside the container. So that the squirrel can't chew on the spring and right. disable it. Yeah. And squirrels are pretty ingenious.
They are. Well, and two things I will say on behalf of those being great feeders. One is they take a lot of seed. They'll take, I think, about 5 pounds of seed or something, which is nice because, you know, when you've got birds happening, you've got to be out there twice a day. So if you can really have a big feeder like that, you can only go out, whatever, every couple of days. And because it's squirrels can't get into it, you don't have to have a baffle. So even mm-hmm. if a squirrel goes up the pole and climbs under the feeder, it closes right away. Yeah. So it's nice. It's affordable in terms of a setup.
Yeah. And Brome's done a really good job at developing and researching. They're down in Knowlton, Quebec, and most of their products come with lifetime warranties. So even if a squirrel chews on it and takes a perch away or you lose something, you call them and they send it out.
Sweet.
They're very confident with the quality of their product. And
you carry them for that reason.
We carry them for the reason, one, their lifetime warranty, two, they're a Canadian company, mm-hmm. and three, they are really great products.
Nice. And good customer service, probably.
Very good customer service.
UrbanNatureStore.ca. And Brome makes the feeders we were talking about.
So it's the Squirrel Buster Pluses and Squirrel Buster Standards and that are on the – they're all on the website. Lots of customer reviews of them.
Sweet. And we will talk a bit about where your stores are and what you're doing in your stores over the next few weeks. We'll be back right after this.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All right. We've got some callers on the line, Paul. People have questions.
Excellent.
Love it.
Looking forward to it.
I'm so happy you're here. It's so much more fun when somebody's here. And, you know, Dean, he wanted to sleep in today. What are you going to do?
He's actually out feeding his birds.
You're right. He could be. And his kids are all sitting in the window teasing him and laughing at him. He's just, they do enjoy bugging him about his bird, his new bird hobby. All right. We've got Wilma calling. Good morning, Wilma.
Good morning. I've got a bromeliad. Okay, that's how you pronounce it, all right.
Yep.
I was given it as a gift back in August. Mm-hmm. Now, I've got about 3 new shoots coming up from the base of it. Mm-hmm. What do I do with them? Leave them there or do I cut them off?
Oh, I would leave them there for now, unless the whole thing is getting top heavy and it's going to fall over. Those little shoots are daughter plants coming from the mother.
Okay.
Ultimately, maybe I wouldn't rush into it, certainly not at this time of year, but perhaps in the spring or summer. The whole plant could become so top heavy that you'll say, the mother needs a bigger pot. And while I'm doing that, I'll sever the daughters from the mother and give them their own little pots. And then I'll have, I'll start a bromeliad nursery.
Okay. Yes. Well, thinking how short a time I've had it, and there's already 3 new ones.
It's a happy plant.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure that'll last over the winter, though, because my conditions change in the winter too.
Right. Yeah. Well. So just make sure it's in bright light. It can be right in a window for the winter, even a southern window or a western window. The only way you water a bromeliad is from the top with room temperature water, nothing cold, nothing hot, no drafts. Keep it away from hot air, furnace vents and that sort of thing. And just always make sure there's some water in the vase or the top of the plant. Think of a pineapple. Pineapples are bromeliads, right? So, we buy a pineapple and you see that crown of leaves on the top. Same idea. So it's just watering into that little crown, keeping moisture. And as your little puppies that are coming up start getting a little larger, use a little watering can and pour water into them too.
Okay. Yeah. Now this is about, I'd say, 5 to 6 inch pot.
Mm-hmm.
Is it too small already?
No, probably not. And this isn't a good time to consider transplanting. Root system on a bromeliad is the size of a thimble. It's tiny. They don't need a big pot. The only reason you get a bigger pot is because of the top heaviness. You'll never see roots growing out the bottom of that pot. So you might, get the same size pot in the future, but get a clay pot, for example. And a clay pot will just give you that weight at the base.
Okay. Right. Now, this is fairly deep. I'd probably say 7 to 8 inches, the depth of the pot.
Mm-hmm.
If I transplanted it, would you plant it down deeper or?
Never, 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 never. No, never. Just a quick aside. When you're at a store where they sell pots, you know, plastic, clay, that sort of thing,
yeah,
different sizes, there's two shapes. One is the standard size, so it's narrow at the bottom, wider at the top, and fairly tall.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll have a size on the bottom, and it'll say 6 inches or 8 inches, and that'll be referring to across the top, size of the plant of the pot. The other kind of pot is called an azalea pot, and it's shorter, stouter, not as flared at the top. So if you wanted to change the shape of the pot, which you could going forward, you could move to an azalea pot, which is not as tall and plenty of room for a bromeliad. All right.
Might not get as top heavy that way.
Well, you just have more soil lower to the ground. Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Thanks,
yeah.
Wilma. Good luck with that. And let us know how that's going. And now we have a question for you, Paul. So wake up. He wasn't really sleeping.
I was paying attention to everything.
He's making notes. He's going to get bromeliads in the future. All right. Sharon is on the line from Gravenhurst. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Question I have for Paul is, are there different qualities of bird suet? I know you can get them anywhere from the Urban Nature Store to the dollar store.
Yes,
Good question.
Is a big, big difference. What you'll find is the fillers in the cheaper quality ones have a lot of corn, a lot of things that the birds aren't getting a lot of nutrients out of. Two suets that we focus on. One is made by Armstrong Milling, which is in Hagersville. It's an Ontario maker. They make a good quality. It's a basic product, but it's a good quality Canadian-made suet. And then our premium one is actually, it's a Mill Creek suet, and it's a Canadian-made, and it is super, super rich. The amount of fat and nutrients that the birds get out of that is quite a bit more than they would out of a cheap grocery store type of...
So you get what you pay for.
You definitely get what you pay for.
Right.
And also, there are lots of different mixes that go in there. The one that actually has the bugs in it is most popular with woodpeckers, but other birds will eat it. Gives them that extra protein during the wintertime that they need for survival.
Mm-hmm.
But it's super rich, and what we try to do is find locally made products for all of our store, but whether it's bird seed or suet, we're focused on Canadian suppliers that are local to the stores.
And freshness would matter too, right? Because suet could go rancid.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And a lot of times suet is traveling a long distance. Like I've seen in stores, suet made in China.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking it's made there, it's stored in a warehouse for a long time, then it gets on a ship, and then it gets to Canada, and then it stores in another warehouse.
Months and months.
It could be even years that it's getting there. Whereas something like the Mill Creek is made up in Newmarket, north of Toronto, and they're making it almost every week or every 2 weeks.
Right. So it's fresh.
It's super fresh, super rich. What you'll find is the richer it is, the softer or more pliable it is. And in the summer, that sometimes is a problem. But in the winter, for the birds, you don't want something solid and dense that they can't chew into.
Right.
So you want the softer, pliable, richer, lots of fatty thing. They're not going to a diet clinic. They're going out to get as fat as possible. Whether it's the migratory birds getting ready to go south or the overwintering birds that stay here for all winter, they're all into the suet. And you'll get a lot of birds that don't eat suet in the summer, but will eat it and devour it at this time. Chickadees will go crazy over it.
Right.
They're more finicky in the spring and the summer, but...
there you go. All right.
Great to know. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you.
And don't be a stranger. We'll be right back after this.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All right, just a few minutes left. Where does the time go?
It just flies by.
Ooh, puns, I love it. Jean's calling from Newmarket. Good morning, Jean. Are you there? Oh, did I? Wait. Oh, my mistake. Suzanne. I wanted to go to Suzanne in Hamilton. Good morning, Suzanne.
Good morning.
What's going on at your place?
Sorry, I didn't know if you could hear me or not.
Yes.
Just a quick question. I bought one of these Reese peanut feeders,
mm-hmm.
and it says it attracts like jays, woodpeckers, chickadees, nuthatches. Well, I don't get any of those birds around here. And I'm thinking to myself, what is it really going to attract? Is it going to attract maybe blue jays?
Just so that listeners know what it is, it's looks like a big slinky. It's in the shape of a ring, and you fill it with peanuts in the shell. The main bird that uses that are blue jays.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. What we recommend is people, when they want to attract blue jays, is to put something like that up, but put it away from their regular feeder. So that the blue jay doesn't scare the chickadees and the cardinals off your regular feeder. But it's predominantly for blue jays. You'll get some woodpeckers using it, but blue jays like the peanuts, big fat peanuts in the shell. And they'll come over and they'll often move the wire so that they can actually pick one of them out. And they'll often sit in the middle and they'll open it up.
And they're strong enough to do that stuff.
Yeah, they're strong enough. Whereas the smaller birds aren't strong enough to actually just pull the peanut out. So it's really designed for blue jays. And if you're putting it out and you're not attracting them, what you may want to do is put a few peanuts around the area so that the blue jays know there are a food source around there. Like in my backyard, I have one of the peanut wreaths, but I also put out peanuts occasionally on the deck railing.
Occasionally, every day, twice a day.
And the blue jays know where it is. The blue jays are also a time-sensitive bird. Mm-hmm. So if they know that the food goes out at 8 o'clock in the morning, they'll often come at 8 o'clock.
And squawk at you.
And squawk at
Where's
you.
Where's the food?
If you haven't put the food out, they'll squawk at you. And so this is sort of making sure that it's available there all the time for them. But initially getting it out there and putting some other peanuts around so that they identify this as a peanut-friendly yard. And then the blue jays will put it on their restaurant map quest and keep showing up
and
there.
At the right time. Suzanne, have you had the wreath out for the last little while and no action?
No, I haven't. I haven't at all. Actually, I was going to give it as a gift, and I was thinking I'd like to try it myself, actually.
Yeah.
And
this is a really good time to feed the blue jays because they're, as I said earlier, a hoarder bird. He's collecting up as many peanuts for the winter as possible. And so he'll come, and it looks like he's eating a lot of them. He's probably eating one and storing 10 away and putting it there. But he'll then know that in your backyard,
he's
got a whole hoard of them stored away, so he'll continue to come through the winter.
Yeah, plus blue jays do move around. Like in the summer, the blue jays go up to where? Algonquin Park or whatever, most of them, not all of them, but most. And then this time of year, it's southern Ontario, I guess, in northern U.S., where they spend the winter.
Yeah, so they'll come down towards the lake area,
right.
Where it's a bit more moderate temperature.
Right.
And so the numbers that we see of blue jays go up exponentially at this time of the year.
And if you feed them, you'll keep them.
Right. And in the spring, what will happen is some of them will start to migrate a bit further north. And then when you get into the really hot winter or into the hot summer, they'll more of them will move up to the bit cooler up thing. But they're not a migratory bird in so much as they head down south, but they actually do head into our area more for the
In our experience, we had like four birds, blue jays all summer, but we're back to like 14 now for the winter, and maybe more now that the words are
with the snow coming, you've probably got more lining up.
And they do have a clock, so they definitely will respond. They're pretty cute. I like them.
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting.
Good stuff. Well, thanks
Very
so much for your call.
Thank you.
Good luck with that.
Thanks for all that.
Sounds like a great gift, and you can pick up more peanut wreaths at the Urban Nature Store. So we have a little short bit of time. Will you tell us what you're doing this afternoon, please, Paul?
I am racing out of here after the show. I'm going to the Pickering store. I visit a different store every Saturday, and I take coffee and homemade, direct from my kitchen, cookies and pastry treats.
Wow.
So I'll be out there all day in the Pickering store with Alex and Jane and our Pickering team, and I'll be there to answer questions and dish up the coffee and then wash all the cups afterwards.
Oh, but of course, nothing recyclable there. And of course, you'll have lots of peanut wreaths on hand to share with anybody who'd like to pick up good gifts for gardeners and, you know, bird lovers.
Yeah, and so the stores have all set up their gift ideas for the winter and are ready to roll.
Sweet. Thanks for coming. Have a great afternoon at the store. We'll see you again soon, Paul Oliver. And everybody else, see you next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.